What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
All these guys who run these organizations who talk about analytics, they have one thing in common. They're a bunch of guys who ain't never played the game, and they never got the girls in high school, and they just want to get to the game.
Welcome to VSiN's Hardwood Handicappers.
As you guys look at me, you see the backwards hat, the gray socks, the funky outfit, and you say, now this guy's a chump, am I right?
No, f***ing geek.
Now here's your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
Welcome in, second hour, Hardwood Handicappers here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Good hour on tap coming up 15 minutes from now. William Hill will be with us. Get his thoughts on how he's handling this Game 7 between Miami and Boston. Now, before we get to some player props, because we are going to get through some of the numbers, find some angles to get to. There's some pretty interesting ones. Want to get to the breaking news. All hands on deck. That is the words that are being used by Eric Spoelstra, Miami Heat head coach. Tyler Hero is set to play. The official designation is warming up with the intent to play, which I think Miami leads the league in at this point. So Tyler Hero is going to be out there. So, of course, the betting market moving solidly in the direction of the Miami Heat. No, not the case. Still sitting at 3 across the board with a total now. This is where the impact is on a guy like Tyler Hero. 198.5 is the highest that we're seeing on the board right now. That would be at the South Point where Vinny Maiulo resides. And Tyler Hero does impact the total. It makes a lot of sense that he would impact the total. Hero on his own, if you look at him as a player, of course, not a very good defender. He's probably going to be a little bit of a liability on that end of the floor. We've seen it, in fact, multiple times. And when he's out there, Boston probably going to go after him, hunt him a little bit in some of those possessions to get some offense going. But on the flip side, offensively, he provides a very good spark for a Miami Heat team that has been desperately looking for a secondary shot creator outside of one Jimmy Butler. It's been a little bit of a problem finding some half-court offense outside of Jimmy hitting heavily contested shots. And at times, the way that the Boston Celtics have been guarding Hero and the Heat have been using a lot of drop coverage, and Hero can work really well against the drop, against the Boston Celtics specifically. He's had some pretty good moments against their drop coverage when they roll it out there. So with that, we're seeing the total get impacted. Still not the side, though. And to me, it's, again, to kind of reemphasize what we were talking about at the top of the hour, last hour, that is. It is wild to me to see the overwhelming support for the Boston Celtics. And again, coming from somebody who does think that the Celtics are the best team left in the NBA. So with that, let's talk about some player props. And forewarning here that I will be a little boring when it comes to player props, especially when it comes like point total stuff. We tend to, when it comes to player props, realize that it's a little overbaked, a little inflated, some of the point totals on some of the star players, as we know. And so a guy like Jimmy Butler, for example, 27.5 is his point total at some spots, 28.5 in others. It is wild how high that is. And I get it. Last time out, we saw him score the 47. He was absolutely incredible. But he's been so hit or miss in this series, right? He's averaging 24 points, but he's got 3 games of 13 or fewer points and 3 games of 29 or more points, 2 of them being 40-point performances. So it just goes like for every number Jimmy Butler has, you know, do I want to bet over 28.5, 27.5, some spots, and maybe even lay a price of -110, -115? When again, too, and this is the other part you always have to realize with these, right? The market's telling you that there are going, that the total is set at 197.5 right now, 198.5. And so Jimmy Butler, his point total prop is sitting at 28.5. That's a large chunk of the point total prop that is up there that is part of the grand total. Like Jimmy Butler, we're talking about a Game 7 that is going to be slow-paced with very few possessions. And just betting some of these inflated point totals over, to me, it's just a really hard thing to ask to do. So for Jimmy, it's not just his point totals. It's a lot of it. Assists, for example. His assist prop right now is set at 4.5 in most spots. He surpassed 4.5 just twice this series, and he's averaged 3.8 throughout the six games. And as we mentioned, the other guys around him are struggling. Kyle Lowry is not playing very well. When we'll get to some props for him, there's an intriguing angle there. But Max Strus, not playing particularly well. Bam Adebayo, not playing particularly well. Jimmy Butler has had to create in isolation most of this series. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you just wonder if from the like asking him to go over 4.5 assists or go over the point total, it just seems like a lot in that grand scheme of things. So I think really out of the two, if we're talking about points for Jimmy Butler or assists for Jimmy Butler, under assists, 4.5, really stuck out to me. Given the nature of the game that we're probably going to get, given how his teammates have played in this series, to me, it just seems like a stronger bet to go under his assist total for this game of about 4.5, as opposed to going over like a point total or something. And when you look at some other players, right? Should be said of Adebayo. He's only scored over 10 points just twice in this series. He's clearly been deterred by Robert Williams. His point total prop sitting at 14.5. But Adebayo has shown, if you just, not even just this series, for example, you go back to the first series against the second series against the Philadelphia 76ers. What happens in the first two games in Miami? Bam Adebayo decimates the Philadelphia 76ers. Has over 20 points in each one of the first two games. Looks like he's the best player on the floor. But what happens? Joel Embiid comes back, and all of a sudden the production drops off for Bam Adebayo, and he's not the same guy that he was in the first two games. Same thing can be said of this series. Robert Williams has played him very well. In other possessions, like the Celtics are not afraid to switch smaller guys on him. We've seen Grant Williams defend him and him kind of shrink away from the moment. We did get the really good Bam Adebayo game in game three, but that was clearly the outlier as opposed to what we've seen from Adebayo throughout this entire series and throughout this postseason. So do you want to go over for him in terms of points? Probably not for Bam Adebayo, which means you look somewhere else. And we're going through the Miami Heat players right now, but there's some interesting angles when it comes to the Celtics players as well. But how about this for Kyle Lowry? This is what stuck out to me. 1.5 three-pointers made for Lowry. While he's not shooting at an overwhelming clip in terms of percentage in this series, Lowry's still averaging 6 attempts from beyond the arc per game, so we know the volume's going to be there. And if he hits 2, then we're just talking about we need him to shoot 33.3% from three-point range. We know he's a better three-point shooter than that to surpass a total like this. So for me, looking at a guy like Lowry going over his three-pointers made prop, that's somewhere where I think you're kind of circling and looking for, hey, you know what, that's potentially something to be looking at here. Now, the market, now this is the important part about these props, you always got to check the prices, the market has moved in that direction too, and that's as high as minus 185. But that's a prop where minus 185, the juice is probably out too far ahead, for me at least, to play something like that. But the market responding in that direction at least tells me that I'm on the right track with a prop like that. I think Lowry going over his made three-pointers prop is something to look at as well. So like, under Jimmy Butler assists, over Kyle Lowry three-pointers made, I think those are two sound paths to take. Something else that kind of tempted me too was P.J. Tucker, right? P.J. Tucker, if you look at both points and three-pointers made, it was kind of a tempting total for him. In terms of points, 7.5 in most shops, three-pointers made, just 1.5. But really stuck out because, like, you know, if you're looking at really like for example, for P.J. Tucker, the scoring in this series. Sorry, I lost my place in my notes. When you look at it from the scoring standpoint of this series, again, lower scoring, he's going to have to be incredibly efficient. If we're talking about fewer attempts, fewer possessions, he's really going to have to make the most of it. I don't know if I want to trust him there. And what also stuck out was the rebounding prop. If you're talking about his rebound prop at 5.5 is where it's at for most spots. He's pulled down 6 or more rebounds in 3 games. He's averaging 6 for the series. But again, I kind of go back to the same talking point here, which is in a slow-paced, low-scoring game like this one, where possessions are sure to be at a premium, are the rebounds going to be available to him to go over that prop? So, like, there are three things: points, three-pointers made, and rebounds for P.J. Tucker that kind of seemed tempting to me, but ultimately wanted to wave him off in that one. And, like, Max Strus as well, this is one where I think is pretty intriguing. His assist prop is interesting because it's actually below what he's averaged in this series. He's averaging 1.8 assists per game in this series. His point total or assist total is at 1.5. He has totaled exactly 2 assists in every game of this series but one. So you would look at that and go, well, of course he's going to go over that. But think about when Strus is going to have the ball in his hands. He's not going to run offensive sets. He's not the point guard. He's going to be out there along with Kyle Lowry. most of the times when Strus is getting the ball in his hands, it is to score. It is a catch and shoot opportunity. It is a cut to the basket. It is going to be an opportunity which I think he's going to try to score as opposed to try to facilitate. Now, we've seen him with the ability to facilitate, thus, you know, all of the games but one with two or more assists. But I think in a game like this, we're talking about this low-scoring Game 7 elimination setting. Under on the assist for Max Strus was something that really stuck out to me. So under on the assist for Butler, under on the assist for Strus, and over on the three-pointers made for Lowry were three Heat-centric angles from a player prop standpoint that stuck out. Now, for Boston, immediately my eyes went to Derek White because I thought this was pretty surprising. If you look at Derek White's point total prop, we're talking about 8.5 at most shops, and it's heavily shaded to the over. But when you look at the way that they have changed to hit the game plan with the Derek White, he has surpassed that point total in each of the last three games and by a mile. We're talking about 13, 14, and 22 points. It seems that the game plan for Boston has been adjusted to get White more involved. He attempted just 6 field goals in the first two games. And remember, game one and game three, he missed game two. And he put up 36 attempts total in the last three. So White all of a sudden has become much more aggressive, probably because he had a child, right? We saw that happen to Fred VanVleet. Was it the Eastern Conference Finals or the NBA Finals, which Fred VanVleet went nuts after having a kid? But regardless, and with White, not only is the point total prop much lower than what we've seen him do over the last three games, but the market shaded to the over of only $1.30 at 56.5% implied probability. And out of all of these, Derek White going over his point total prop to me was the one that I think I put at the top of the list. We can go down the list with the others. Tatum, his point total is pretty crazy when you're talking about averaging to 24.8 for the series and asking him to go over 28.5 in a low-scoring game like this. Brown's total is pretty wild high as well, but at least on the under is the favored side. And I thought if you're looking at Brown to go over his point total prop, which is like, what are we talking about with 23.5, 24.5? I think your better option is to bet him going over his three-pointers made as opposed to points. Because if he's going over his point total prop, he's going over his three-pointers made prop because it's only at 2.5. His three-point shooting has been how he's been getting him.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Cam Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip?
But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like.
Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
Majority of his scoring in this series, and I think it'd be a pretty interesting angle to look at it from that perspective. But outside of this, I mean, there's a lot of different angles from a point total perspective, or excuse me, in like a three-pointer attempts, or excuse me, made for Grant Williams. But I think those are the angles that are worth looking at. So we'll come back to this because I think there's also, we haven't done, like gotten into the market of Eastern Conference Finals or NBA Finals MVP. And the Eastern Conference Finals MVP is pretty fascinating if the Celtics win, because there's a case made for a lot of dudes coming into Game 7. And depending on how those playoff performances play out, then we'll see who wins it in that one. When we come back, William Hill, host New York City Cast, to be with us, get his thoughts on how he's handicapping Game 7 and how he'll look at a series between either Golden State and Boston or Golden State and Miami.
Welcome to VSiN's Hardwood Handicappers. Now here's your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
This segment of Hardwood Handicappers brought to you by Zyn Nicotine Pouches, a fresh way to enjoy nicotine without all the baggage of cigarettes, dip, or vape. Zyn Nicotine Pouches, smoke-free, spit-free, and available in 10 varieties, and they come in two strengths, so you can easily find the satisfaction level that's perfect for you. Zyn America's number one nicotine pouch, available in over 100,000 locations nationwide, meaning it's never been easier to find your Zyn, so go to Zyn.com/find, locate a store near you. Product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. We welcome in William Hill, host of the New York City Cast, VSiN contributor at Not The Will Hill up on Twitter. Before we get into the basketball, I was just griping off the air, Will. What's the damage? What happened to my Halos?
It was 9-6, but it is no longer 9-6. It's 9-9. But hey, you were down 6-2, and you guys bombed Berrios. Berrios has been terrible for Toronto this year. Has. I saw that number move to like plus 135 on Toronto. I was like, boy, that's a hefty price. But I guess Guerrero was sitting. That's probably part of the reason. But 9-9, it's been a little bit of a slow-pitch softball game. So it's been a fun game, 9-9. Bottom of the seventh right now. And I just saw Burns won that tournament. What were the odds on Burns? Because he came from way back. Do you know what he was pre-tournament?
I do not.
He's 30-1 all the time too. Yeah. I bet him all the time too, except not this week. Frustrating.
Now 30-1 is what Elliot, our producer, tells me in my ear. So wow. Good hit there. You said humans had him?
No, I'm saying I bet him very frequently for that. Whatever the reason this week, I didn't have him. I think I need a little break after Mito Pereira last week, but, guess he won it in a playoff. That was a hell of a tournament because there was like four guys tied, you know, 10th, 11th hole. So that was a good tournament. I thought Scheffler was going to win.
I just pulled a Mike Francesa talking to somebody who's does not have a mic and is off the air. I was talking to Elliot, I guess. No, Matt Youmans apparently did have Burns in this one. So,
okay.
Right. Hey, look, there's the tie-in, Will. New York, Francesa. There we go. That's why we have you on. A man I strive to be. Game seven. So we get the word that Tyler Herro is going to play. Spoelstra uses the quote, all hands on deck. I will open up with this with you. So I am very much, and I've said this for a while, I think the Celtics are the best team left in the NBA right now. However, that is to a point. I am very much surprised that the market continues hand over fist to bet this team, it seems, on a game-to-game basis against Miami. Do you think that three on the road in elimination game setting is a little high here for Boston?
Yeah, but I echo your sentiments. And again, you can get some, I don't know what the cheapest money line is out there. Maybe you're just better off. I think $1.40, there are $1.45 available. That's where I went. I bet Boston. I think they're the better team. Home court hasn't meant a whole lot in this series. Remember, Miami won game one at home. Since then, the road teams are 4-1. So it's certainly been a wonky series. If you told me Friday afternoon, hey, we're going to have a game seven on Sunday, I would have just been absolutely floored. I'm shocked Miami won the game. Once Boston went ahead, I'm shocked Miami came back. Lowry hit that huge three. Brown missed the free throws. That being said, I just think Boston's still better. I thought Boston had some issues the other day. I thought getting into foul trouble was big because they're playing some of those lineups with Marcus Smart, Derek White, Robert Williams. That's just not a lot of shooting. It's not a lot of spacing. And Miami was really able to sort of pressure Tatum and Brown. And I think Boston wins a close game. I don't know about the over-under here. I think, you know, I grabbed some 199s right away. I played a little over 195, just hoping for a middle, just because I think we see the same thing with the total where it opens one number, then all the trends, people realize, oh, it's a game seven, and then the under gets bet. So don't have a big opinion on that one. I was expecting a lower scoring, you know, scrappier early 2000s type of series. We really haven't gotten that, whether it's pushing the pace, some good shooting. These teams have scored better, shot better than I really kind of expected. But I do think Boston probably wins a close game here.
Yeah, I was citing that at the beginning of the show. Four of the six games have gone over the total, and the four games that have gone over, they've gone over by an average of about 15 points. So these have been higher scoring than the market has assumed. And I wanted to hit on one point that you brought up, and we shared a couple of tweets real quick on Friday night. So I've been kind of invoking these issues for Boston in clutch time, right? In the regular season, I think a lot of people would be surprised to know that they were 26th in clutch time net rating. So game within 5 points, last 5 minutes, they were outscored by 9.5 points per 100 possessions in those minutes. And that was because their offense was so bad. They only had an offense rating of 97.7. And while we haven't had a lot of clutch minutes in this series between these two, Will, we've had two games like that. Boston has lost both of those games, and you've kind of seen it, right? Like, you've seen the way the offense, you mentioned those weird lineups, kind of gets a little stagnant. The turnovers start to rise here a little bit. Like, Boston kind of consistently shoots itself in the foot. And while I think they should win this game, those little things really worry me about when we're talking about a game seven that seems to be pretty tight on paper.
Yeah. And on the road, I mean, you're really going to win three games on the road in one series. That's going to be difficult. And you're right. The clutch minutes have been an issue. they'd had so many blowouts. You know, the Celtics fan, the Celtics supporters say, you know, we have so many blowouts. We don't play that many close games. That's why our numbers are a little skewed. There's probably some truth to that. But like you said, it's a little like Gonzaga in college basketball. They just, you know, they all year they play Pepperdine and they play, you know, Santa Clara. Then they get in the tournament and they look up and, you know, they play a 16 seed, then an 8 seed. Then all of a sudden they're playing Arkansas and they're in a tough game and they don't always respond to that. So I do think there's an element of concern there with the clutch time minutes with Boston. So yeah, I think you bring up a good point. What plays do you have on this? I know you got some outstanding futures, so you're just sitting this one out.
Yeah, I'm pretty much just sitting this out. Like I've got outstanding futures on both Miami and Boston, so I just want to see how this goes. Maybe in game, see if there's an angle to play. But I was boring here. I'm going to play it safe and get one of my tickets onto the NBA Finals.
Not bad. What did you think? I gave this out this morning, and I don't know. These markets are here and there. They're not everywhere. Jaylen Brown, 12-1 to win Conference Finals MVP. So, Tatum's been a little better. I don't know that. I think it's pretty open, you know, up in the air. If Brown has a big game, you know, Tatum's had bad moments in this series. I don't know that he's going to win it. If Boston wins, they'll probably give it to Tatum. I just think that number is a little mispriced. I think there is some value on Brown. Would you agree with that or no?
I completely agree with it. And that's one of the questions I was going to ask you, because if you look at it just from the consistency standpoint, I mean, Brown's been consistently pretty good and their numbers are comparable to one another. And the biggest difference between the two is that one of them is shooting 41% from three on seven attempts per game. And it's not Jason Tatum. It's Jaylen Brown. I think the price is more indicative of the name that is Jason Tatum at this point right now. It's pretty clear. We know who's going to win it if it's going to be Miami. It's Jimmy Butler. There's no case to be made for anybody other than Jimmy Butler on the Miami Heat. But you're telling me Jaylen Brown in the range of 10-12-1. Hell, I think I can make the case, Will, if he comes out and has a dominant defensive game, that Robert Williams at 200-1 could potentially win this Eastern Conference Finals MVP.
Yeah, and again, with these awards, you're betting on human beings as much as you're betting on anything else. But yep. Yeah, I agree. I think this price is it's a misprice here on Tatum being such a heavy favorite, because you know he's really had some questionable moments here in this series, especially with the turnovers. You know, Brown's had plenty of his too, and they both, you know, struggle, especially Brown with the dribble sometimes. And like I said, Brown missed those free throws, but to me, 12-1 is a pretty good number.
Yeah, and I'll ask you. So this is my theory. I'll get your thoughts on it. So my theory was that for conference finals, now that we're going to have these MVPs. That maybe, just maybe, you're going to get some nuance in the voting here, that a lot of the people that are voting on this award are potentially beat writers who have followed the team since day one, have a little bit more hyper-focused in analyzing of the games, right, that are being played in front of them, that it's not just national member checking in, voting for best player on best team, because Curry absolutely deserved to win Western Conference Finals MVP. But I think that does open the door even more for a Jaylen Brown to win this as opposed to a Jason Tatum, because you're getting folks who have been covering these teams for a while that are potentially voting on these awards, as opposed to a Kendrick Perkins coming in and voting because he just got to get there for the MVP.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's that's a really good point, I think. Plus, it's a conference finals MVP, so it's not going to be as scrutinized.
Right.
If you vote Brown, you vote some other guy, nobody's going to be sitting here and not going to be talking about it on First Take tomorrow, you know, who should have won conference finals MVP. I think we care about it as betters maybe than anyone else. It's a new award. It's fun that they added it. It's something else to debate, something else to bet on. So I think it's a lot of fun. But again, I don't think it's going to be as scrutinized as the finals MVP. And hell, we still talk about Iguodala winning it, you know, 7-8 years ago when, you know, should Curry have won it? Should LeBron have won it on a losing team? Forget what podcast I was listening to the other day where that's rehashed. That you're not going to have this, you know, 8 years from now, we're not going to be talking about, hey, did Jaylen Brown deserve conference finals MVP or Tatum? We're not going to have that. So I agree. It, you know, leaves up more room for interpretation, I would think.
By the way, there's not been to be a shot at Kendrick Perkins, you know, even though his all rookie ballot was a little weird. All right. Really quickly, last 2 minutes here with Will. Golden State Warriors, they're waiting for whoever it's going to be. I'm in the camp of Boston matches up better with Golden State. If it's Boston, Golden State, I think they win it. If it's Golden State, Miami, and I think that the Golden State Warriors match up pretty well with the Heat, and they're going to win that one as well. But what do you make of these two potential finals matchups that we're going to see? And would you have a favorite lean either way?
Yeah, I would think Warriors in 5 or 6 if it's Miami. I'll still go Warriors in 7 if it's Boston, just because they have game 1 at home. They have game 7 at home. But you make a good point. You know, Boston has played very well against these Golden State teams. Even the prime, you know, Steph, Clay, Durant teams, that Boston's done very well in those series. So that would be a hell of a series. I think the NBA is probably rooting for a Warriors-Celtics final. You get, obviously, you got Curry in there already, but you got the Celtics, their tradition. You got Tatum. They haven't, you know, won title in the last 30-something years, so that would be a hell of a storyline. Give the Warriors credit, though. Not very often do you get to see a dynasty that, you know, they win a few titles, they get knocked off, miss the playoffs, then they bounce back and have a chance to compete for another title. So this is impressive by the Warriors to sort of rejigger this roster and be in position to win another championship. And That being said, Boston tonight, I think there's a lot of pressure. Fourth conference final last 6 years. You know, 2018, they're up 2-0. They lose game 7 at home. All right, they're young. 2017, they got buried. They weren't the better team. But 2020, they're in the bubble. They were favored. They lose that series. You know, this year, they're up 3-2. They're a 9-point favorite in game 6. This would be a terrible loss and I think a missed opportunity if they don't close this out tonight, because these windows close in sports. You know, Embiid's still in the East. Giannis, Durant. You know, the circus doesn't stay in town forever. You only have so many chances to win these championships.
Look at the Utah Jazz. It looked like that window was going to be open for a while. Looked dominant. Now that seems to be shut at this point right now. Not the Will Hill is where you can find him on Twitter. Will, always good to talk to you. Plug it up. Everything you find, New York City Cast website. What do you got going on?
VSiN.com/podcast. Just had Mike Westhoff, former Jets special teams coach. He was awesome. He had a lot to say about a lot of things. So check that one out. And I'll be rooting for your Angels. Hopefully they took a lead for you.
Me too. Hey, good to talk to you, man. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it, man. See ya.
You got it. Oh, it's 10 to 9, by the way. We'll be back here on Hardwood Handicap.
Welcome to VSiN's Hardwood Handicappers. Now here's your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
All right, welcome back in. It is Hardwood Handicappers here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up at 15, Daniel Alvari will be with us to get our weekly look at the WNBA. And I think there might be a future worth playing at the top of the board in the Women's National Basketball Association, but we'll get Danielle's thoughts on that coming up in a little bit. All right, a lot to get to in the next 10 or so, so let's get right to it. First off, Eastern Conference Finals MVP, that market is up now. And I think it's a pretty fascinating market. You know, we were talking about this with William Hill, who just joined us a couple of minutes ago. And I really do think when you're talking about the way this market is priced, Jason Tatum, the odds on favorite, -115. Behind him, Jimmy Butler, +110. Jalen Brown at 12-1. Then you get into the triple digits. Bam Adebayo, Al Horford, both 150-1. Marcus Smart, 250-1. Onward and onward. You can get Robert Williams at 200-1 in some spots. Can I tempt you with Victor Oladipo at 500-1, huh? No, you shouldn't be. So really, this comes down to a couple of things. For Miami, there is no question. Do not try it. It is Jimmy Butler who is going to win this. If Miami wins this game, Jimmy Butler could come out, score 0 points, go 0-15 from the floor, and they still somehow win. Jimmy Butler is going to win Eastern Conference Finals MVP. There's no question about that in any way, shape, or form. So Miami wins. It's Jimmy Butler. That's it. Now, the other part of this is who wins it if it is the Boston Celtics? And there's a lot of options for the Boston Celtics. Obviously, there's the odds-on favorite, who is Jason Tatum. There is Jaylen Brown, who we talked about with William Hill, and I think those are obviously where you begin this thing, mainly because the odds dictate it. But I think when you're talking about this market, it is the play at this point, just like it was before game 6, it was going to be Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown has been really good in this series. Yes, he had the 12-point stinker against Miami in game 4, and he only played 29 minutes and was 5-20 from the floor, but he's averaging 24.2 points per game. He is shooting 41% from 3 in this series to go along with 7.3 rebounds and just under a full steal per game. Jason Tatum, on the other end, his numbers are comparable to what Jaylen Brown has been doing, but he's been a little less efficient, especially from three-point range, averaging essentially the exact same amount of points, 24.8, on 48.4% shooting from the floor, but 33.3% shooting from three. What this just comes down to at this point right now is who's going to have the better game in Game 7. But here's the thing. If it comes down to just who's going to have the better game in Game 7, should one of the guys be the odds-on favorite to do this? Because I don't think that's the case. I think this is a coin flip at this point right now. So if that is the case, there is immense value on a Jaylen Brown to win this award in the range of that 12-1 that we're talking about here. That's a really good price on the guy who has numbers comparable to the dude who is the odds-on favorite to win this award in Jason Tatum. So for me, the value play there, no question about it, would be Jaylen Brown to win this thing in the range of 12-1. Now, a couple of days ago, before Game 6, I think there was a really strong case to be made for Robert Williams, who really, from a defensive standpoint, had changed things when he came back in this series. He played in Game 1, and Game 2, missed Game 3. And if you look at just his impact defensively throughout the series, because the numbers aren't going to get you there, right? 10.6 points per game, 6.6 rebounds, averaging 10-6 in an Eastern Conference Finals is not going to win you an award. My thought was that there's enough people that are watching this and understanding what he does defensively that maybe that would get you there for the award. But I think that's all done and good. And by the way, we're talking about like he was in the range of 450-1 or so to win the award just a couple of days ago, still in that range now. So thought that was worth the long shot performance if he came out, especially in Game 6 and had impact defensively. That was not the case. But I think it's pretty clear. Jaylen Brown, if you're betting into this market, if you have not bet into this market yet, it would be Jaylen Brown to win Eastern Conference Finals MVP. You're not laying minus 110 with Jason Tatum. And if you want to bet Miami in terms of that, you can bet Jimmy Butler at plus 110, or you can just go out and bet Miami in the money line today, which is in the range of about plus 120. There's no use in betting Jimmy Butler at this point right now. You missed the boat completely. I had a friend of the show who texted in and said he's got Jimmy Butler Eastern Conference Finals MVP at 75-1, bet a couple of games ago. That's pretty good. Looks pretty good at this point right now, at least from a value standpoint. But again, if you're just getting into this market, there's one play only from a number standpoint, and that would be Jaylen Brown. Now, from there, let's talk about the other MVP market, NBA Finals MVP. So I think that this is boiled down. It's pretty simple for me when it comes to Finals MVP. When you look at it, Steph Curry right now, the favorite to win it at plus 110. Jason Tatum coming in behind him at plus 230. Jimmy Butler plus 650. Jaylen Brown 10-1, as is Klay Thompson. Draymond Green, then you get to like 20-1s and onward. If you're looking at this, so we have two teams that are still alive in the Eastern Conference. We have the Western Conference champion already decided. It's really simple for Golden State. If the Golden State Warriors are winning the NBA Finals, Steph Curry is winning Finals MVP. He has the narrative behind him. He has not won the award yet. Voters will be looking for any excuse to give him this award. All he's got to do is come out and average 20 points on efficient shooting, and the award's going to be his. I don't think there's really any question about it. Can I make the case for an Andrew Wiggins type? I was talking about this with Elliot off the air before he came on. Andrew Wiggins to potentially win this award. I think so. I think there is a case and a path for an Andrew Wiggins to win this. My problem with it is that you as a bettor are counting on voters who we have a large sample size of now that don't really look at these awards with a lot of nuance and would look at an Andrew Wiggins, specifically in a series against Miami. I think he would be more of a viable option because he's going to draw the main defensive assignment against the Jimmy Butler. That way they have enough nuance to realize what Wiggins is doing on that end of the floor and look past what could potentially be some high point totals for his main assignment, which would be like a Jimmy Butler type, to realize what his workload has been on top of averaging like 16 points per game or whatever it is. Maybe. They did it with Andre Iguodala. But also, I don't think they really had another option outside of Andre Iguodala other than LeBron James, and I don't think the media was going to give the losing team an MVP or Finals MVP. So with the Warriors, to me, it's Steph Curry or pass, unless you're getting better odds on an Andrew Wiggins type than about 20-1 or so. For the Miami Heat, it's the same thing. If Miami Heat are coming back and winning this game in Game 7, and then, of course, winning the NBA Finals against the Golden State Warriors, it is one Jimmy Butler who is winning that thing. There's no question about that in any way whatsoever. For Boston, though, I think that's where it becomes interesting because there's just more options for Boston. We talked about the two guys at the top right now in terms of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. As we can see through the course of six games, those are both two dudes who can average 24 points over the course of a best of seven and be the best player on the court on any given time. So you have those two options. You have a Marcus Smart, who not only can score to a decent clip, but is their leading point guard. So he'll probably lead the team in assists on top of drawing a primary defensive assignment in a Steph Curry. So Marcus Smart comes out, has a pretty efficient clip in terms of scoring, takes all of the load in terms of defending Steph Curry. All of a sudden, the Celtics win the NBA, Celtics win the NBA Finals. You could find a path toward Marcus Smart winning MVP. My overall point here is that when you're looking at the three teams that are still available to win the NBA Finals, there's one option for Miami. There's one option for Golden State. But the market gets pretty wide open when you look at a Boston Celtics championship and who could win Finals MVP. So that's the way I would approach it at this point right now. I think it's pretty interesting to see how that would play out from a Finals MVP standpoint. But right now, when you're looking at it from tonight, man, there's going to be a lot on the line. Not only a berth in the NBA Finals, but an Eastern Conference Finals MVP trophy, which of course will define the legacy of... I can't get through it. I won't define anybody's legacy. I think Will had a good point. Nobody's going to remember who wins these awards. All right. Really quickly, wanted to just touch on this in these last couple of minutes before we get to Danielle, because you know I've been checking every day. The markets are starting to grow for the NBA draft. And we touched on a couple of these for Adam with Adam Stanko, who joined us in the first hour. He was absolutely fantastic. But over the last couple of days, DraftKings has added odds to be second pick, third pick, fourth pick, and fifth pick in the NBA draft. Now, second pick in the NBA draft, pretty self-explanatory. Chet Holmgren, $2 favorite, minus 210. Jabari Smith Jr., 2-1. You get the drop-off after that. Mancaro, 650. Then you get into 50 and beyond with Jaden Ivey, Shaden Sharp, and others. That's going to make sense. Both Holmgren and Jabari Smith Jr., they're going to be around $2 for the top two picks. You're not going to make them that high because they're kind of interchangeable. You could see either one going, right, flipping those two. Paolo Banchero seems very, very solidly cemented as the third best player in this draft. And thus, cemented to be the third overall selection for the Houston Rockets. And I also think he kind of matches up well there. Like, I think he's a good positional fit for what the Houston Rockets have. But as we move forward here in some of these markets, I would direct your attention to like the fourth overall pick, for example. So at this point right now, when it comes to the fourth overall selection in the NBA draft, that would be one Jaden Ivey, minus 225 to go with the fourth overall pick in the NBA draft. Fourth overall pick, of course, belonging to the Sacramento Kings. Now, you might think that Jaden Ivey is the fourth best guy in this draft. Maybe he is. What I find really interesting about him being priced that high is that this is a Sacramento Kings team that is inundated with guards at this point right now. Now, it doesn't stop them. Didn't stop him from drafting Davion Mitchell last year in the top 10. And it's not going to stop him potentially here for wasting a pick on a taking a pick on another guard. But if you're talking about implied probability and you're telling me that minus 225 in the range of about a 70% chance that Ivy is the guy, I think that's pretty high. So I would direct your eyes to a Keegan Murray type at 7-1. Keegan Murray fits really well with the Sacramento Kings. Again, really loaded backcourt in terms of bodies. They really need a lot of wing talent. I think Keegan Murray would fit pretty well besides a Harrison Barnes as well and a Domantas Sabonis. It would be really intriguing to see Keegan Murray there, and I would definitely circle him and keep an eye on him as well. But also keep an eye out, and he actually wasn't listed here. A high riser in this draft has been Dyson Daniels, who seems to be really taking on. He won the combine, did really well there, got a lot of good measurables. Just keep an eye on this kid out of the G League. It looks like he is turning a lot of heads and getting a lot of attention. Some reports have him solidly within the top five, so a name to keep an eye out there. All right, we'll come back. Danielle Alvari will join us next. We'll give you one more update on everything going down with the Game 7 line. Danielle's going to give us an update on what's going down in the WNBA. Which favorite is worth playing at this point in the futures market? We'll tell you next.
VSiN's Hardwood Handicappers. Now here's your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
VSiN Summer Specials here. For only $39, you're going to get everything VSiN has to offer from now to the end of July. Next few months are going to be filled with the best betting content in the business right here at VSiN.com, and subscribers will have access to all of it. That includes Adam Burke's daily Major League Baseball Best Bets. I'm going to have best bets all the way through the NBA Finals, which gets started on Thursday. Andy McNeil breaks down all the action on the ice through the Stanley Cup playoffs, plus lots of NFL preseason coverage as well, not to mention continued best bets and premium articles covering golf, UFC, USFL, and NASCAR. If you want the full VSiN experience that features a daily best bets email, every edition of Point Spread Weekly, use of our betting tools, and a live video stream whenever you want it. Cost is only $39 to be a subscriber through July 31st. Sign up now at vsin.com/summer. We welcome you back in the last 15 minutes of Hardwood Handicappers. A quick last update on the number. No real adjustment. Still sitting at 3 across the board in favor of Boston in this Game 7 against Miami. Total up to 198.5. We are 45 minutes away from tip-off. With that, let's...
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip? But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like. Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season 2 of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
Welcome in Danielle Alvari, who we have negotiated behind the scenes, and she has agreed to appear weekly on Hardwood Handicappers to give us our taste of the WNBA. And Danielle, it is good to talk to you. How has the day gone for you? It was actually kind of a busy schedule today in the WNBA.
Yeah, I had to make bets last night because there was a 9 a.m. game. And fortunately, that came home for me on the Atlanta Dream, who just blew out the Phoenix Mercury. I don't know what kind of Twilight Zone we're living in that the Atlanta Dream can blow out the Phoenix Mercury, but that is what I went with, and it ended up being a very comfortable bet because that was basically a coin flip, if you can believe it, for the odds. And then we were obviously in the midst of this Liberty Seattle game, which I know that you were on. I decided to stay away from it for kind of some obvious reasons. We're seeing a little bit of a blowout happen here.
Still got a shot.
I'm just going to diss myself next. I had some first quarter bets going in this Sparks Lynx game, and it literally could not have gone worse. It's the worst first quarter the Lynx have ever played that I've ever seen, but they are shooting like 22% right now. So I'm expecting them to bounce back a little bit as this game moves forward. So I did go live on an over 160.5 on this Sparks Lynx game.
I like it. All right. So I have some big picture questions for you before we get to some of the team specific stuff. But, so the more, and I've talked to you about this, and the more I watch the Las Vegas Aces, who yesterday got a pretty good win on the road, and the more I look over their numbers, like is it too hyperbolic to say that what Becky Hammon is doing here with the Aces is kind of revolutionizing the WNBA to a certain extent? The other night they set a record for most made three pointers in a game with 18. Mm-hmm. The night and day nature of their numbers from last year in terms of 3-point attempts to this year. They were a good 3-point shooting team last year, but they just didn't shoot that many. This year they're shooting more and they're still shooting it really well. They're playing smaller. They're quick. They got 4 or 5 out. Like, I just don't know if the WNBA is kind of ready for this team. And you've seen it. Like, their only loss at this point was a Mystics game, which was a terrible scheduling spot for them. I think they got stuck at the airport the night before or something like that. Yeah. Am I getting too caught up in the moment here when I see them at like plus 225 and what they're doing statistically and thinking, hey, this team's the best in the WNBA and they're playing a style that the rest of the WNBA is not really used to yet?
No, you're absolutely right. And it's funny because I was talking to a friend about this and I was like, man, the Aces are just in a league of their own this season. And someone said, well, I've heard of the Aces. They're one of the best teams every time in the WNBA in the last couple of years, right? And I said, yeah, but in years past, it's been like Aces, but kind of Seattle Storm and these other teams are in the mix. They're just sitting on their own tier right now. There's nobody even close. And it's I always say it's interesting because what they did in the offseason was a little bit of a head scratcher sometimes. You weren't really seeing what the big picture was going to be for Becky Hammon, but they added the exact right pieces they need to all of a sudden be this insane perimeter offense that they didn't really have before. They always had Asia Wilson. Obviously, they've had her playing more consistently out of 5. That was a decision by Becky, so we haven't seen her points go crazy, but this team basically filled in all the exact holes they needed, then added this incredible coach who comes from the NBA, is going to change this style of play. It's funny because the teams that I used to enjoy last year were the teams that were being a little bit more 3-point forward, but they didn't have all the other pieces locked in, right? The Dallas Wings and New York Liberty, they love to shoot the 3. They love to push the pace. The Aces sometimes struggled with that perimeter offense. They've completely shored that up. They don't really have a weakness right now if you look at them. So it seems like literally the other day I bet 2 units on them, and I don't usually bet multiple units on a team, and this is a team I can do that with.
So when I'm talking, like, I can see plus 225 is the best price I've found on them to win the WNBA championship. Would that be an investable price at plus 225? Because some spots are as low as plus 150 right now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily seeing them fall off. Here is one thing to consider, though, with the Aces is if you actually look at the stats from their game with the Sky on Saturday, which is the defending champion team, the Sky actually could have won that game if a couple more of their threes fell. They obviously didn't have that happen for them, but they did a really good job of containing the Aces. That said, if you look at the bench points for the Sky, they were actually more than double. I think that at one point the Aces had almost no points off the bench. So they lack depth. And for that reason, if they have injuries, that could literally tumble this team down. So if you want to wait on the off chance that might happen to this Aces team, it's going to be a huge hit if they lose one of their starters. But other than that, I do think that the Aces are definitely worth investing in to win a title because they're built to do it.
Okay. So then we talk about injuries. If you look at some of the advanced numbers in the WNBA right now, the Aces are actually second in net rating. The best team in net rating would be the Connecticut Sun, who outscored their opponents by 16.9 points per 100 possessions. bring that up because we get news this week. Jasmine Thomas, torn ACL, season-ending injury. Yeah. How bad is this for Connecticut?
It's just throwing a wrench in their smooth operation, if you will. I always say that Connecticut's one of those teams that has really, really good chemistry. They just are really good at relying on each other. And when Jonquel is getting double teamed, they can go other places. Right now, they're really struggling with turnovers. And I think that's a factor from two things. A, they're trying to switch around and see what they're going to do now without Jazz Thomas. And B, and probably actually should be A, more importantly, they're dealing with a lot of turnovers. So I think trying to get their lineup right and figure out what's going to be best for them now moving forward and locking those things in, they have all the pieces. They're an incredible team. They're not a team I'm going to fade later in the season, but right now they're just really struggling with turnovers.
Okay. I'd be interested because like right now it seemed like it was going to be 1A and 1B between Las Vegas and Connecticut, but that injury could change things between them. All right. So now some of these other teams that were starting to stick out. First off, I want to put I'll shine another light here. Market is yet to catch up with Washington. They're now 7-2 against the spread. The Mystics are at this point. Big picture wise, I'm not sure, but like we keep riding this, right? Like this, Lamar, have you seen any real adjustments from a power rating perspective on the Washington Mystics?
No, I think that the market's still undervaluing them a little bit. And also it's tough because Elena Deladon, we know what she brings to the table, but we also know that there was going to be games she's going to sit out, trips that she was not going to make. And most recently, that's what we saw versus the Sun. And I just thought that they gave them too many points, honestly, against that Sun team, because the Sun and the Aces are the teams that are highly valued, like we just talked about here. But I would say that the Sun, in terms of the point spread, are a little bit overvalued. And I think the Aces, in terms of the total, tend to be a little bit inflated. So it's hard to bet Aces overs, even though they easily can go over these. It's hard to bet them because they're pretty, pretty high. They're right at the top there. They're almost a little too inflated for me. I'd rather get something in-game on an Aces total. And then for the Sun, similar situation. Their spreads are just a little bit too high. And they're probably going off the metrics, just like we are. We see how good this Sun team is on paper. It doesn't always mean that they're going to close up those 10-point wins, right? So as far as the Mystics are concerned, I think that when Elena Deladon's out, the book doesn't really know what to do with that yet. And it makes sense, but I think this is only going to make this Mystics team stronger. They're having to play without her and see what works without her. Natasha, obviously, Cloud does her job too when she's in there, and she and also obviously Coach Tibalt are not going to be the team that misses playoffs again this year. So I actually think this Mystics team is really solid even without EDD in the mix this year.
Okay, I like it. Now, another game, another team, these are actually two teams. I'll lump them together. We actually did just watch them play one another too. Pretty sustainable at this point that both the Fever and the Sparks are going to be these over teams. Specifically, like the Sparks, they are a terrible defensive team, as are the Indiana Fever. But the Fever play at such a breakneck pace, man. They're so quick.
Yeah, Fever and Sparks both in the top four for pace right now, even pace per 40 minutes as well. And the Fever, that's kind of what they have going for them right now is their offense. We talk about this as being the fun team, but I think for me, because they have so many young players, the Fever are a representation of where this league is going. We talk about that with the Aces too. The Aces lead the league in pace right now, and the Fever are right behind them. So I'm excited to see this game pick up even more, and I'm excited that this is what's coming for the future of the WNBA. We have all these young players coming fresh out of college and immediately making an impact. Emily Engstler just saw there, I think already breaking records as a rookie. And so the Fever are exploiting what they're doing well, which is scoring. But like I said, the defense needs a little bit more shoring up. But I'm excited to see how this Fever team advances even into next year.
All right, so no games Monday, but Tuesday we get four games. Biggest one on the card is going to be Connecticut versus Las Vegas. What would you think a number like that between those two would be? Aces at home.
I think that the books are setting the Sun up for failure a little bit in some ways in terms of covering. I do think that the Aces are going to be favored here. It'll be interesting to see by how much. I think that even though Connecticut is trying to push their pace, that's something that their head coach, Kurt Miller, said they were really going to focus on this season was to try to push that. They've done it. It's created more turnovers. They're dealing with lineup issues. I think the Aces are definitely going to win this game. And I think they'll cover a spread pretty much, I mean, up to five even, I would go with them, or higher. So I do think that the Aces are by far the better team here, and it's not even close.
I like it. All right, Danielle Avar. Danielle, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you for the insight. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, JVT.
You got it. All right. Man, I'm telling you, I'm hooked. A lot of this stuff has been great in terms of these betting angles in the WNBA. These total on these Fever games and these Sparks games, watch out for them because they are flying over the total, specifically the Fever, who are just running up and down the floor. All right, well, with that, we're all done here in Hardwood Handicappers. Again, we're still sitting on three, so we'll see what happens. I do believe that the Celtics are going to win and move on to the NBA Finals. So remember that when the Heat blow them out by 20. Hopefully, we get a good Finals regardless, though. It's been fun. We'll talk to you next week here on Hardwood Handicappers. See you, folks.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.